Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. You know who I am. You know what I'm here to do. I'm here to choke, I guess. Oh, I tried to do a Sam Tripoli XG. I am Isaac Weishaupt, and today we're continuing our start. Sorry, my chest. I'm coughing. I just got back from the CrossFit, the greatest place on earth, and a lot of cold air. So huffing in some cold air. Did a 30-20-10 workout of back squats and burpees and running. So I'm a little gassed. But anyway, we're here to talk about Starbucks. Part two. If you listen to part one, we talked about Abraxas, the occult god of Gnosticism. We talked a little bit about the idea of the Starbucks logo. Sorry, let me back up. We're talking about the Starbucks logo, right? The fish lady with the bobs out for all to see. We talked about how this looks very much like the chicken-headed snake god of Abraxas, who also has the twin serpent tail. We talked about how there are different theories as to what Abraxas is. A talisman. A play on the magical word abracadabra. And the names of God, right? We talked about various figures like Carl Jung and how they said that Abraxas was God, and the formula from the Zohar of how to pronounce the name is what gives the magician control over the unseen realm of the subatomic. All kinds of wackiness. And of course, this all came from a post I saw, a viral post from Pastor Greg Locke, who said the Starbucks logo is 1,000% Lilith. And Starbucks is communist and godless and also a coven of witches. It's all those things, which doesn't make any sense, because if it's a coven of witches, then there's a god involved. They believe in a horned god and the goddess of nature. I don't think Greg Locke knows what he's talking about. I'll just go ahead and say that. And I'm just a hater. You know, I had a conversation with my new best friend, Mary Reber, the owner of the Laura Palmer House. If you haven't listened to that interview, please do. It was very good. And I think I've come to the conclusion that I'm just a hater. I've decided I don't like any other theorist. I don't know why. I don't know what started this. I just feel like since the pandemic and Trump and Q, I now trust nobody. And I've been on the fence about it because, you know, I got a lot of friends that are conspiracy theorists, you know? And that's no shade to them. I like them. I'm not saying every theorist is wrong with me, but I do have a tendency to be a hater. And I don't know what to do with that. Do I just roll with that? I think I do. I think I just roll with it. I think they're all wrong. I don't know. Don't listen to me. What the hell do I know? I'm just presenting the information. You believe who you want to believe. It looks like 227,000 people follow Greg Locke on Instagram. So he's doing okay for himself. And look, I don't know the guy. I've never read a book of his. I've never heard a full lecture. I saw a 2-minute video on TikTok of him saying that Starbucks was, the logo was all these things. And I dismantled that particular argument. Now, you could argue that he's got a longer explanation for what he meant by those things. I'm willing to hear it out, okay? Because you know what, Greg Locke? Me and you are on the same team. We're on the team of Christ. I just think he's got it wrong. That's it. I'm getting a lot of heat when we get into religious discussions. Because I am of the Orthodox Christian camp that believes in worshiping Christ in private, and you live up to your values, and you know, I'm not into judging other people and things like that. Whatever. Moving on. Starbucks part two. We're gonna actually go back to the original description of this logo. What do the people who made it say? Let's listen to them first, right? That carries a lot of weight. We're gonna talk about Norse woodcuts. Sounds boring. Kind of is. Depictions of mermaids and sirens and Melusina, who ironically will support Greg Locke's theory. I'm going to support Greg Locke by the time this is over. By goodness. Sorry, it's high T Isaac today, so I'm feeling uber feisty, all right? But we are gonna end up coming back around and saying, you know what, Greg Locke might not be too far off base. Something to do with that logo and connected to selling one's soul, witchcraft, ritual magic, all those things. So without further ado, the Starbucks logo, right from their own website. Let's see what they say, right? They call it the siren. They say, the siren is our muse, the face of our brand. Her image and our strong word mark are our most recognizable brand assets. The preferred approach is to use the siren logo by itself, unlocked from the word mark. This allows flexibility to present the siren with greater prominence while maintaining a considered, open, and modern presentation. Oh, that reminds me. Before this is over, I'm going to also tie this logo possibly to aliens, which, through some degrees of separation, you could say connects us into Luciferian one world government, which you could argue connects us into communism and godless stuff and Greg Locke. All right. From the Shopify article, of all places, Shopify article on the history of Starbucks. This is, and I've read this on several sources. I'm just choosing to read it from this one. Sorry, man. That burpee's got me good today. Oh, it's getting colder out. See, that's the problem, you know? In 1971, the Starbucks founders wanted an unforgettable name for their new coffee company. They had heard the words beginning in ST were alluring and memorable. And so they initially settled on Starbo, the name of a mining town that they came upon on a map. They thought of Starbuck, the name of one of the characters from Herman Melville's classic maritime tale, Moby Dick. Since they were, sorry, I'm doing two things at once here. I'm looking at where the Starbo mining town was. I didn't finish that. Where's Starbo at? At first glance, it looks like it's up in Washington State, which would make sense, right? Because that's where Starbucks is near, apparently. All right. Which, of course, ties us into Twin Peaks, right? Some damn good coffee. Damn good coffee. Since they were selling coffee beans, tea, and spices from around the world, it made sense for their moniker to nod to the seafaring tradition of the early coffee traders, as the Starbucks website states. When designer Terry Heckler sat down to design the Starbucks logo, he focused on the brand's nautical theme. Through his research, Heckler was inspired by a Norse woodcut of a two-tailed siren from the 16th century. It's a metaphor for the allure of caffeine, the sirens who drew sailors into the rocks. He told Seattle Times in 2011, I've been cutting back my caffeine, by the way. I'm down to 3-ish cups a day. I was drinking a lot, far too much. And my sleep is better. I have deeper sleep and more dreams, more vivid dreams. Okay. The logo's inviting aura and association with seafaring tie together central ideas of the Starbucks brand, making great coffee from around the world accessible in an appealing space, which I would argue is not what they offer. I do not like Starbucks coffee. Nothing against their coffee. I actually think it's probably pretty good coffee. They just make it so, because I drink coffee black, and when you drink coffee black, it's like too intense. Like it's too smoky. It's too strong. Like it's undrinkable when you drink it black. So you end up putting lots of milkies and sugies in there. And I think that's why they do it, because most people drink lots of sugies and milkies in their coffee. And I think they have no love for the black coffee drinkers, which is insane, because that's the true coffee drinker, right? I don't know why they don't make a blend for folks who drink it black and then a blend for folks who put the sugies and the milkies in it. That's what they need to do. If they want, look, and I'm okay with Starbucks. I actually have no problem with them. If I'm on the road and I need a black coffee, I'm not going to Starbucks. I'm not doing it. Or I go to Starbucks and I got to put the sugies and the creamies in it, and then it doesn't taste like coffee to me, and I'm like, what am I drinking here? an article on Atlas Obscura talks about this woodcut. Because that's what they're saying. They're saying the image was found on a 16th century Norse woodcut, okay? While some have tried to track down the 16th century Norse woodcut from the original image, which the original image was called, others, like blogger Carl Pierdom, argue that such a woodcut never existed. By the time woodcut images on paper arose in medieval Europe, around 1400, give or take, there weren't any people that you could properly call Norse. The woodcut was likely drawn from an image of Melusine, or Melusina, as I've seen it, who was popular in France and northern Europe during the 15th and 16th centuries. This first siren had bare breasts, a plump stomach with a belly button, and promiscuously splayed tails, though redesigns have hidden these features. Howard Schultz, the businessman who transformed Starbucks into a contemporary global coffee empire, described her as bare-breasted and Rubenesque in his book, Pour Your Heart Into It, How Starbucks Built a Company One Cup at a Time. Now, okay, we're going to go with that. So there's something in the back of my mind that was weird. I actually created the first part of the show and completed most of my second part research, and I was on Twitter, and someone, and ironically, Sam Tripoli had tweeted an image of the different Starbucks Abraxas iterations, and someone in that thread linked to a Robert Sefier YouTube video about the history of the Starbucks logo, and I started to watch it. I think it's like 49 minutes. I made it maybe 5 minutes, and I was like, I don't know. It's a little too stuffy for me. You know? I need a little more sensationalism. You know what I mean? Like, I watched too much Real Housewives of Salt Lake to watch a 50-minute biography. But it looked like he was on the same path I was, of saying, this is tied into Melusina. Okay? So, did this Norse woodcut image ever exist? Why would they claim it if that's not what happened? Maybe this person was just confused. Maybe. Okay, I'm going to keep reading from this article here. In the 14th century, a French text was published that described the story of Melusina, a beautiful queen whose bottom half became serpentine while she bathed. This character soon became associated with the twin-tailed siren. Then reveals the first usage of this siren. It says, the particular split-tailed and long-locked mermaid whose descendants populate coffee cups all over the world first appears on the mosaic floor of a cathedral in Pesaro, Italy. This mosaic was created during the Byzantine era in the 7th century. 500 years later, she became a focal part of the mosaic in the Otranto Cathedral. Now, ironically, the website in which I'm reading this content, it shows you an image of these mosaic floors. And the image it shows us is a depiction of Satan and hell. And that's what the caption even says, which I found intriguing, to say the least. And it's because the mosaic on the floor shows us the creation story, the tree of life, and bad things to avoid, right? Vices. And this is where you see the siren, the mermaid. Because sex with mermaids is a vice. The sirens are the alluring lust, okay? And, you know, fun fact, Christopher Columbus, he couldn't resist the vices, the lust for the mermaids, and he proceeded to have sex with a manatee, as the legend goes. He thought They were sailing to America, and he thought he saw the mermaids of mythology, and they were manatees. And allegedly, from what I read, he made sexy time with it. How does one have sexy time with a manatee? I don't know. I find it hard to believe that story, to be honest. But nonetheless. So, in part one, we said maybe it's Abraxas, but it's like, well, that Abraxas has the chicken head. And if we're saying it's not Abraxas and it's a mermaid or a siren, well, let's dig into that with the Melusina as that exact figure, okay? There's a different website, thehistorygirls.blogspot from 2016. It talks about Melusina, this particular mermaid, who apparently Robert Sefier and myself are, and some others, right? Like, I'm reading it online. A lot of people say the Starbucks logo is based on Melusina. Okay. Melusina, it says, the mermaid, her two-tailed sister and their feathered Greek cousin, the siren, were associated with the death and destruction of men. Their origins are almost certainly pre-Christian, rooted in the worship of water spirits and goddesses associated with rivers, lakes, and the sea. Their presence in Christian places of worship could suggest that they still needed to be propitiated, which means appeased or pacified. The churches that contain examples of these strange and fascinating images are often, although not always, near the sea. The mermaids were also probably there to offer a different kind of warning against women in general. They're all like that down there, really. Look at that Melusina. Lust in particular and sins of the flesh. So, I know we talked about a lot of strange things. Let's kind of come back around here. Because the question we're trying to focus in on is Starbys illuminate confirm. Okay? Well, is it Abraxas? I don't think so, because it doesn't have that chicken head. Is it a mermaid siren? Probably. Is it from a 16th century Norse woodcut like the co-founder Terry Heckler claimed? No, it is not. So what is he talking about? And to prove that further, a different website, the Scott Smith blog, it says the Norse ceased to exist as such around 1300. Woodcuts didn't arrive in Europe until around 1400. Finding a 16th century Norse woodcut would be like finding a photograph of Leonardo da Vinci or a selfie of Abraham Lincoln. It just didn't happen. And on that same blog, Scott Smith blog, it says something else very interesting. According to the Symbol Dictionary, the twin-tailed mermaid is Melusine or Melisande, a siren of Anguipede body type. Now, I did know what that meant for a minute. I'm going to have to look that up, folks. All right, folks, I'm going to look it up. Anguipede. My Alex Jones voice is turning more into Billy Bob Thornton. What was that movie where he plays a mentally disabled person? Mashed taters. Anguipede is a kind of divinity often found in magical amulets, characterized by having serpents for legs. Okay. Let me back up. A siren of Anguipede body type, who is also a symbol in alchemy. The legend of Melusine runs deep in French history, even to the days of Charlemagne. Several royal houses trace their lineage from Melusine's family, including houses of Plantagenet, Angevin, and Anjou. Many rulers, and when we talk about the history of France and the bloodlines, this is something we talked about in my very first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory. You can get it for free. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, sign up for my free email newsletter, and I will send it to you. That email newsletter is just me sending you updates on new shows, new merch, and appearances. You know, I usually email maybe once a week, sometimes twice at the most. But I own it. I'm not going to sell it ever, I promise you. So sign up. I'm not going to spam you out. And you can read about the history of France and how the logo ties into the bee, and the bee is a symbol for magic, all this stuff. Okay. Many rulers of French descent through history, including Richard the Lionheart, have claimed to be descended from the devil. As cited by the historian Flory, the chronicler Giard Lel Cambrian reports that King Richard was fond of telling a tale that he was a descendant of a Countess of Anjou, who was in fact the fairy Melusine, concluding that his whole family came from the devil and would return to the devil. There's the Faustian bargain right there. The Faustian pact is tied into Melusine. And Melusine is the Starbucks logo. So it seems more in league that Melusine specifically is the mermaid in question on the Starbucks logo more than some random mermaid from a 16th century Norse woodcut that didn't exist. So what's really curious here is that Melusine is supposedly in a bloodline with the devil, and the first depiction of her is a scene in hell and all the vices. So I'm surprised, because I started this journey as a way of saying, look, this Greg Locke, he's like Bible thumping and he's being excessive and whatever. And look, I don't mind a little Bible thumping. I love Christ. But sometimes I think some of the Christians get a little overzealous and they get a little crazy. You start burning books and telling people how to live. And I'm just like, man, that's going a little too far for me. But here we are. I can't deny the link here. All right. And again, I don't embrace cancel culture. I'm not like, oh, don't you dare drink Starbucks. You're giving money to the devil. You know, it's up to you, right? Whatever you think. Let's unpack the Melusine thread a bit more. There's an opera, which I found in my research. If you read from a book called Defeating Dominion, The Discourses of Magic and Witchcraft, there's a chapter that talks about women having supernatural powers and how they help normal men, like basic men. And Melusine is described as having a bit of a curse attached to her, okay? The curse, of course, is that on Saturdays, her legs turn into twin serpents. And she marries this husband and makes him promise to never seek her out on Saturdays. Saturdays are for the boys. And in exchange, Melusine says, look, as long as you don't touch me, don't come near me on Saturdays, I'm going to do my thing. And in exchange, I will give you wealth, happiness, land, castles, 8 boys, all the things you could ever want. And it was all good, but her husband, Raymond, has a brother, and his brother starts tripping out a little bit. He's like, bro, what do you think she's doing on Saturdays, man? She's with her boyfriend, bro. Wake up, dude. So she's bugging, man. She's out sleeping around. And Raymond is like, oh, we're not doing that. You know the vibes. I'm going to go crash the party right now. And he goes to find her, and he does. And he busts open the door, and there she is with her half snake, fish, dragon legs. And she's chilling in her little Saturday bathtub. Now, he doesn't tell her. He sees her, and she doesn't know, but she's the all-knowing. She knows that he saw her. So he starts acting out, and he starts saying that, hey, maybe this chick's a witch. And they end up divorcing. And Melusine gets punished also. She doesn't get this immortal soul with him in their Christian marriage that she was originally trying to do. That was her end of the deal. Point being, this opera says that Melusine was accused of being a witch because she does a sort of Faustian pact for her husband Raymond, giving him all the, you know, the great things. So maybe, just maybe, Greg Locke stumbled upon an element of truth here. You know, maybe. He says Starbucks is run by a coven of witches. But, I mean, there is a thin thread here from the logo to witchcraft. So, I mean, do what thou wilt with that information. But wait, and there's more. There's more. We're not quite done yet. We're almost done. I found a research article entitled Melusine and the Starbucks Siren by Sarah Allison. And it talks about this confusion of Melusine being the logo. And it questions if a double-tailed mermaid on the cup is actually the same entity as Melusine. All right? She says, all the medieval authorities agree that from the navel downwards, Melusine was a snake and not a fish, and indeed was a kind of flying serpent. It seems odd, therefore, that the woman with the double fishtails should be blazoned a Melusine in German heraldry. And then it goes through a bunch of stuff, and it concludes with the following. Same thing I'm finding in my research about the Starbucks logo. Obscurity, a little bit. Because she dug deep into all this stuff. She says, it is unclear how the traditionally one-tailed Melusine became linked to this image. Tracing the source of the Starbucks logo leads to an obscure end, but its similar double-tailed mermaid is bound in art and heraldry. And Sarah says that the image seen, which again, the creator claims he saw it on a 16th century Norse woodcut, could have been from this 1962 Dictionary of Symbols by Juan Eduardo Sirlot that has an image of a double-tailed siren from the 15th century. So I'm not sure where to go with all this. You know what I mean? Because according to everything we've looked at, we've connected the logo possibly to a Gnostic god Abraxas, possibly to a fairy mermaid named Melusina who could have been a witch or a facilitator to the Faustian bargain, a product of the devil itself, or a 16th century Norse woodcut that apparently never existed. And with all these theories that don't add up always, it leads me to believe, with zero evidence, by the way, that the Starbucks logo may have been channeled inspiration. Maybe it came to this guy in a dream. Like how David Lynch channeled the information about what the Red Room looked like for his Twin Peaks show from a hot car roof. And this aligns real nicely with the theories and the ideas presented in Professor Dana Pasulka's new book, Encounters, right? And American Cosmic. If you haven't listened to my two interviews with Dana Pasulka, I don't know what you're doing. Head there next. In fact, let me put a little reminder for myself to put a link in the show notes. I'll try to remember. It was just a couple shows ago. A different realm or a different dimension has information that people can tap into, protocols, rituals to channel higher intelligence information. That's the idea. Plus, if you consider the ideas of contacting higher intelligences going back through Timothy Leary, Aleister Crowley, John Dee, it is interesting that the Starbucks logo looks like another one of these fish gods described by the Nomo of Mali, the Dagon fish people that came from Sirius. Sirius, of course, the source of Thelemic current of the Aleister Crowley New Age. Oannes of Babylonian mythology. Now, synchronistically, I'm reading Robert Anton Wilson's Cosmic Trigger right now, and I'm not even joking. This passage, just literally today, this morning, I was doing a little work around the house, listening to a little Wilson. Get this. The stele of revealing contains, in addition to Nuit, Horus, and Ankhfenakhonsu, a mysterious winged globe. Dr. Jacques Vallée in the Invisible College gives several other forms of the winged globe from Egyptian and Gnostic sources, points out the similarity to modern sketches of UFOs by witnesses or contactees. The winged globe with an eye on it appears in an ancient Assyrian seal found by astronomer Temple and reproduced in his Sirius Mystery. In this case, it is accompanied by Oannes, the water god, whom Temple identifies as probably an extraterrestrial visitor from Sirius. Note the fishtail on Oannes. Now look at the illustration on page 113, which is a drawing from the Dogon tribe of Africa. I think I had that backwards. I said the tribe was Nomo. The tribe is Dogon. The fish gods they believe in was were the Nomo, whom they claim was a visitor from Sirius. Note the similar fish tail. Dr. John Lilly, who has duplicated much of Timothy Leary's research and supplemented it with hypnotic methods and Sufi yoga, describes many encounters with what seems to be an extraterrestrial intelligence in his Programming and Metaprogramming of the Human Biocomputer. Dr. Lilly agnostically examines also the possibilities that these transmitters are time travelers from the future, very advanced Illuminati adepts alive now on Earth, angels in the traditional sense, or projected aspects of his own mind. Wow. Okay. Let's catch up. Let's go back here. First off, Dr. Lilly's book, I've read that book, and it's all about using science to approach the idea that mankind just is a computer that we can program and do whatever we want to do with, right? It's a simplification of, and that's my beef with science. They oversimplify the human body, right? A lot of the big pharma solutions are oversimplifications. But what's interesting is that Lilly was saying that channeled information was likely time travelers, us, from the future, which is what we can read about in Dr. Dana Pasulka's book, Encounters. One of her characters, I believe it was Simone, believed that that's what AI is information of the evolved form of mankind from the future trying to instruct us how to evolve. And also it's interesting that Sirius ties into all this, of course. The fish gods from Sirius. And corporate logos, right? Sirius, the satellite company, has the dogs. It's the dog star. And Sirius comes up, if you read The Dark Path, which you should have, is my most popular book. And boy, was I on the nose. I wrote that in, six, 7 years ago? And everything I was saying is kind of unfolding, right? That and my two alien books are shockingly on the pulse of what's being revealed to us. Revelation of the Method, these occult practices to contact higher intelligence to evolve mankind. That's what we're talking about. And unfortunately, we're going to be alive in the time that mankind has a serious choice to make. I don't know what the right answer is. But anyways, let's wrap it all up. It's also strange, right? All I'm saying is that the Pasulka book seems to be leading us towards this same idea. And she's friends with Jacques Vallée, so maybe I'm not too far off base there. And remember, Jacques Vallée told her, hey, you should get this book, A History of Satan? What? Listen to those episodes. And share them with a friend. All right. So what do we make of all this? I certainly don't know. I see a lot of uncomfortable connections to occult concepts of Sirius, fish gods, Melusina, which ties us into witchcraft and devil stuff. It's hard to know. It's hard to know how overzealous to be about this. I mean, life's got so many complications and hard things that I'm not too worried about. I'm not trying to be mad about it, is all I'm trying to say, right? Like, I don't like Starbucks because I don't like the taste of it. And I certainly don't know, right? But let's talk about the grams of sugar. And because here's the thing, is if I go to Starbucks, I'm not getting the black coffee because I got to make it unhealthy at a certain point. But I do like me a pumpkin spice latte. I can't deny them that. They do make a good PSL. However, if you go to the Starbucks website and look at the nutritional data, it talks you right off the cliff real quick. All right. A venti, which is 20 ounces, that's the biggest cup, granted, for a pumpkin spice latte is almost 500 calories. I could eat two McDonald's cheeseburgers for that amount. And I'd have less sugar because there's 63 grams of sugar in a large pumpkin spice latte and 16 grams of fat. And for comparison, and in fact, I can't take credit for this. There was a viral video by a guy named Bobby Parrish, who I don't necessarily always agree with, but he's got some good points. And he points out, if you go to Dunkin' Donuts, they've got a thing called an iced pumpkin swirl frozen drink. And a large has 900 calories and 162 sugars. 162 sugars. I get my CrossFit coach gets me my macros, and I'm only supposed to have, I mean, granted, I rarely hit these macros because I like eating crap, okay? I do my best, but I'm only supposed to have 65 sugars a day. That drink has 162 in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I don't drink soda. One soda can put you over your sugars for the day. No wonder everyone's diabetic. But I do love Coke, man. Coca-Cola is my jam. I drink Coke Zero. I don't know if it's much better. Now you got weird chemicals in it. So I switched over to Zevia. And Zevia, it's fine. It's one of those things where it's fine. It's not good enough that every day I'm tempted to drink one, but it's there. I'm like, man, I want a Coke Zero. I'll drink the Zevia because Stevia is better for your microbiome and your gut, from what I'm told. And what ends up happening is, like, you end up just not drinking it. You're just like, screw it. I'll just drink more water, I guess. And to put that into perspective on the sugars, Krispy Kreme has a glazed donut. It has 10 grams of sugar in one donut. You can eat. You can either drink the Dunkin' Donuts iced pumpkin swirl and have 162 sugars, or you can eat, you know, what is that? What's the math on that? 16 donuts? 16 donuts! That's insane. It's insane. So anyway, in conclusion, America is, you know, we're a sick nation. We're over sugared, over fatted, over salted. And, you know, I don't feel bad. These corporations, they make this stuff, and it's like high octane. I don't want to say poison. I mean, it tastes good, right? Some people, they're like, man, I drink my latte every day. That gets me through the day. I know. But you're going to get diabetes, and then you're going to start losing body parts, getting neuropathy. Your penis ain't going to work anymore. Is that worth it? It's not. But have a latte. Have it once a month. You know? Have the one with the less sugar in it. That's all I'm saying. I want you to be healthy, right? I'm not saying it because I'm judgmental. I'm saying it because I want people to be healthy, man. Like, people make these bad decisions, and sometimes you just got to substitute. Like, don't drink it every day. Cut back. Do a black coffee with a little bit of sugars in it. That's still going to be way less sugar than a pumpkin spice latte. Why are we talking? You know, food and nutrition is what got me down my red pill path. So that's why it's always there. I started out with that, you know? Anyway, I should get an expert on here who actually knows what they're talking about. You know, I've read several books. Michael Pollan, I think, had a really good book on the idea of how they put fat, sugar, and salt and everything. It's hard. You know, I went to the doctor the other day because I don't have a primary care, and I was like, I need to get a primary care doctor. I'm getting old. So I go to this guy, and he was a really nice guy. I liked him. We got along. I'm talking about Bruce Springsteen, the boss. And there's some things we just didn't vibe on, man. You know, like, he's got that, and this isn't a dig, but he's, you know, doctors, they generally have that sort of Mr. Smithers look because they're vegan and they run every day. And I'm like, man, I'm not trying to look like that. I'm not trying to run every day. That sounds like a nightmare. I don't want that. I want to look like Matt Frazier, you know? Anyway, all right, let's wrap it up. Starbucks, is it Illuminate confirmed? The jury's out. The jury's out, but there's several paths you could choose here that could connect you through. And to be honest, I don't know if Greg Locke's that far off. I do think he's being excessive. I do think that just because you're drinking Starbucks doesn't mean you're going to hell. But, you know, it depends on how overzealous you want to be, because all these corporate logos are permeating the atmosphere and enabling occult concepts to come into our sort of a sphere of understanding the world around us. But I don't know what to tell you, you know. I just watched a Rob Zombie movie last night, 31. I just finished it. Brutal. Demonic. I mean, does that mean I want to go out and do these demonic, brutal things and kill people? No. No, I don't. So I think it's up to individual people. But, you know, if you find yourself drinking coffee and wanting to worship the devil, then maybe you should back off on the coffee. So, I don't know. So surprisingly, Greg Locke wasn't terribly far off base. So we've come around full circle. I don't think he's terribly wrong. And I hope maybe I could shed some light on it for you. And maybe some new, you know, and that's my prediction. Maybe the guy who made the logo or the Starbucks guy will say, you know, what really happened is I had a dream. And in that dream, I saw this image. That's what I think is going to happen. All right. Thanks for joining me on that journey. Seemed like a strange subject to deep dive on, but nonetheless, there it is. I've heard about it so many times over the years. I was like, I got to dig into this. I got to know. And it's still just a tad bit fuzzy. It's still a little fuzzy. So thanks for joining me. If you like the show, share it with a friend. That's your mission. You know someone who drinks Starbucks every day. Send it to them. Open up a little dialogue. Do these corporate logos influence our behaviors and actions? Do they make you want to worship the devil? Thanks for joining me. Yeah, share an episode. Drop a 5-star review. Have a great weekend. Stay woke.